We are the Metrons.
Hello and welcome to Whom Pods Destroy. I'm Terry DeFellin. If you are new to this show, then this is a Star Trek discussion podcast that focuses mainly on the original series. I am the host, and on each edition I am joined by Graham Sibley and Derek Mantle. On this show, we discuss a classic episode with an iconic character, that being Arena, which features the Gorn. Believe it or not, the Gorn has only appeared in two episodes of all of the Star Trek franchise, unless of course you count the skeleton in Star Trek Discovery. There are other things that go on in this episode, and we're here to try and pick it apart and find out what's happening and what they're trying to say, if anything at all. As usual, although the episode is over 50 years old, there will be spoilers, so we recommend that you watch Arena before listening to our podcast.
Now, Whom Pods Destroy.
The Metron?
This is your opponent, Earthling. I have heard every word you have said.
All right, what do you want?
I weary of the chase. Wait for me. I shall be merciful and quick.
Like you were at Cestus 3?
You were intruding.
You butchered helpless human beings.
We destroyed invaders, as I shall destroy you.
Can that be true? Was Cestus III an intrusion on their space?
It may well be possible, Doctor. We know very little about that section of the galaxy.
Then we could be on the wrong.
Perhaps. That is something best decided by diplomats.
The Gorn simply might have been trying to protect themselves.
Yes.
Welcome back to Whom Pods Destroy, Star Trek Discussion Podcast. I'm Terry, and I'm joined, as always, by Derek and by Graham.
Hello.
Hello.
How are we doing, chaps? All right?
Yeah, hello.
Yes.
It seems like ages since we were last here.
Yes, it does. Yeah, I've got a bit of stubble since I haven't shaved since last week.
Yeah. That little meme of ours, I think it's coming towards the end of its life because I actually forgot to do it. I had to remind myself.
Yeah.
This could be the last knockings of that particular meme.
Maybe what you should do is pre-record it along with your opener.
With everything else. Yeah. At some point, everything is going to be pre-recorded about this episode, and there's going to be like about 2 minutes of you guys just like, and then it'll be that,
that'll be
me reading poetry or whatever. The episode that we're going to be discussing is another first season episode. We're going to be talking about Arena. This is a much loved episode, guys. Much loved. Why?
Oh, it's got loads of iconic bits and pieces. Oh, your favourite alien, the Gorn.
It's got the Gorn in it.
Yeah, the Gorn. Yeah.
It's got a fucking Gorn in it, mate. Yeah, that's the reason why everyone. Yeah, loves
I got some ointment for that if you want it.
It is perhaps the most visually iconic episode, and it's probably the most referenced, most parodied. Well, almost most parodied. Do you think most parodied?
Do you think it's parodied? Yeah, it could be.
It is, but I feel that the other one, the games
is of Triskelion,
which is probably paranoid.
I'm looking forward to us doing that.
You know, yes.
there's tons to unpack there.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I always think the Simpsons parody of games. Anyway, I mean, it's the Gorn, isn't it? The Great Gorn, and Vasquez Rocks, of course, as well, isn't it?
Yes.
I don't know. Is it the first appearance of Vasquez Rocks?
I don't know. I think it is.
Vasquez Rocks, for the uninitiated, is the set. Not the set. It's the
location.
Describe it. The location.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not a mountain range, is it? It's rocks. It's literally rocks.
It is. It's a geological formation.
Yes.
In a park, just
in California.
Outside. Los Angeles, yeah, not very far away at all from Burbank.
The UK, obviously, with Blake Seven and Doctor Who, had
quarries.
Yeah, it's the same thing, isn't it?
In Los Angeles, they have rocks.
They have rocks. They have bigger places.
And it's always sunny, and it sets off beautifully because must be a cinematographer's dream because you've got the wonderful, deep, rich blue sky, cloudless blue sky above it, all that, and then these light coloured rocks, all that natural light just bouncing off of there, absolutely gorgeous, a wonderful environment for you to put a man in a rubber suit.
Yeah. Oh God, poor bloke.
Bobby Wood, I think, is his name.
Woody.
Woody to his mates.
And I may have got that wrong, but he's a regular on the convention circuit, and he walks very slowly. He does guided tours and stuff like
very
that.
Slowly.
Yeah, very slowly. Yeah. I mean, what do we think of that suit, guys? I mean, what do we think of that creature?
Well, I want to ask Graham about this. Is that, you see, I only watched the remaster version.
Yes.
And he's blinking.
Yes, those are CGI blinks.
Ah,
okay. Those have been added. He was not in the original. He had no eyelids.
I remember being around your house years ago, actually, not long after those remasters had come out, and watching it on Sky with you, and watching it on probably on CBS or something like that, and it just coming on. And we thought, oh, right, it's Arena. And all right, we get to see the CGI Gorn. Obviously, it's only partially, it's mostly.
Yeah.
But the eyes are the key thing there with that remaster, don't they?
Yes.
And because they twinkle as well.
Yes.
Which I don't think they don't really do on the original.
No, they do actually do, if we're going to go into the differences between CGI and the remastered and the original, they do add quite a lot of shimmer onto this episode because the closing scene with the Metrons, they're a lot more shiny and glimmery in the remaster.
Yeah, I got that impression. Yeah.
But the only other changes are they actually changed the some of the texture shots of the location when they say over there by the higher ground, and when they throw over their mortifier, the way they fire it onto is actually a lot more mountains and a lot more
on Cestus 3.
Yes,
I read actually that they there was a bit they've actually they tried to hide in the original one they tried to hide the buildings that are actually in the distance, people's houses and stuff.
That's on the, when they first come down, there is a sort of like an artificial sort of thing going across the top there to cut
and
out,
and they CGI'd that out properly this time for the
now it's more of an open expanse. But
you can see all these bungalows.
They should have left it in.
They've left some bungalows in. Why not?
So yeah, I mean, it begins on Cestus 3, and it begins with this. It's a very dramatic start to the episode, isn't it? Where they beam down, and it's a nice early season one. So we don't go. Oh well, didn't they do a sensor sweep and realise that there was no life form down there? Because I mean, shut up.
Just because shut up.
Yeah, yes. Just because shut up. and why didn't they just use the because shut up?
Yes.
but shut up. Just shut up.
Okay.
These nice dramatic establishment shot. Cestus 3 has been destroyed. Boom. Space the final frontier. Very, very nice. And
sorry, I was just going to say this was one episode that I really remember the difference now between watching it on the BBC first time round and watching it in its original form.
Yeah.
Because obviously people, international listeners may not know, but when the BBC used to show them Space Final Frontier, always used to be right at the start.
Yes.
And the cold open used to come in straight after that.
Yeah.
And then you'd have the scene, the close, and then open again into the first act.
Yeah.
Which always used to be weird, and this was one of the episodes where I actually remembered it in that format, and then seeing it in this way around was
yes. It's interesting also because the BBC version cut an awful lot out of this episode. There's a lot of stuff, and I don't know why. There's any particular reason why they did it. They just did it. Maybe they just did it for time purposes, because it were just for scheduling purposes. I think they just removed some stuff which I didn't see until much later. Because I mean, like a lot of times, I watched this episode and had it on VHS, which I taped off the BBC, and it wasn't until much later when I bought the VHSs that I sometimes see the full version.
Yeah.
And Arena was one of those, and thought, oh wow, there's all this other stuff, some stuff on the bridge, conversations between Spock and McCoy, and that byplay. This episode, I think, is also celebrated because it perhaps has a message about war and the barbarity of barbarism of war and the futility of war, and also about, you know, the benefits of talking to people and peace and all of that. And also there's a supposed to be, I think, a message about how easily you can become caught up in these things and how, you know, how wrong you can be. I'm not actually certain that this episode actually meets that. Rewatching it again, I have to say I was quite disappointed with this episode. I didn't think that it really fully conveys that. I don't know whether or not you've got an opinion on that.
I've got an opinion on that. I think that's because of time. Obviously, this is a 60s show. A lot of the other shows that have been around at the same sort of time were probably a bit more black and white. Because, you know, it was like 30-odd years since World War II. Well, 25 years. 30 years since World War II. The Cold War was still going on.
I understand what you're saying. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I understand what you're saying about that. But I mean, like, we just watched Corbomite Maneuver, where we've seen characters go through genuine arcs within that kind. For me, this is just a badly written, this is not as well written an episode as it could have been. Because the journey, the arc that they go through, you compare Bailey's journey in his arc in Corbomite Maneuver to Kirk's in Arena. I mean, he starts off saying, we've been attacked. All right, he's there. He's been shot at. He's understandably uptight and out for blood. But he doesn't really get... I mean, he kind of, at the end, he realises, oh, well, you know, maybe you're trying to protect yourself. But, I mean, he doesn't go through that kind of journey. I mean, considering it's at the end of Errand of Mercy, where he's just been taken to school by the Organians, and he's sat there on the bridge at the end of that going, I feel embarrassed. Because he's become like this warrior dude. When in fact, you know, and then he's just been made to look really, really foolish.
You have a point,
and
sorry. Look
like, and there's none of that in this.
He has a weird journey in this this episode.
Yeah.
I think as a viewer, we probably have the easier journey because we've got all the other characters who are already making more of those leaps. And I think actually you're right, he's quite clunky for Kirk. His character is clunky because you have Spock who, at the beginning... quite way through when there's the chase sequence and Spock is going to say you're going to blow them to shit, you know, and Kirk's all up for that because it's justice.
Yes, Mr. Spock.
You mean to destroy the alien ship, Captain?
Of course.
I thought perhaps the hot pursuit alone might be sufficient. Destruction may be unnecessary.
Colony Cestus 3 has been obliterated, Mr. Spock.
The destruction of the alien vessel will not help that colony, Jim.
If the aliens go unpunished, they'll be back, attacking other Federation installations.
I merely suggest that a regard for sentient...
There's no time for that.
And later on, when we find out about the case of McCoy's conversation with Spock about the invasion, that actually the other side has seen this as being an invasion, and have we done this wrong? So actually, as a viewer, we actually probably have a better journey to go through it than Kirk does, because it's a bit more clunky, because he is that warrior dude.
Well, literally the rest of the bridge crew are seeing it with the viewers as well.
Yeah, they're watching the same episode.
Yeah, they're watching on telly just like us.
Yes, that was a rubbish episode.
I mean, they're all sitting around like, you know, Spock's got the best TV chair there as well.
And his snacks beside him.
Which is a weird scene, but it is all part of that, and the fact they're all watching it on TV. But I suppose it does go into some of the themes as well. A theme again going back to the cage, like we did in the last episode, the Metrons behaving somewhat like the Talosians in setting this up for their own pleasure. And this is what Kirk's doing. This is what really triggers Kirk off, is that he's realizing he's being played. He's killing this guy not because he thinks that it's something that he needs to do.
Yeah, obviously, Arena made me think it was like a game with you know, those people looking at contest.
The problem I think with the episode is that you can easily lose the whole thing of what goes on at the beginning. That it's actually part of the Metron's plans or something like that. That it's all involved in it, and it's not. It's entirely separate from it. This is just something that happens.
Yeah, it's just like two kids out on your lawn having a fight, or even perhaps even, you know, to use a worse, two dogs having a fight, and they're turning a hose on them. maybe that's sort of like more of an analogy.
Or is it like the scene in Pulp Fiction where Bing Rhames comes through the door and is when they're having a fight with Bruce Willis? Yeah. And they both end up being chained to a couple of chairs in a cell or something.
No, it is. I mean, like, this is like, you know, this is completely not our business. So there we are. And then something happens and they decide, all right, okay, this is happening on our patch. We're going to do something. We're going to intervene. So it is like, I mean, it might have been more fun if it had been a Gorn and Kirk strapped to a chair with pool balls in there.
That's your Piccadillo. Don't bring us into that, Terry.
You could bring out, bring out
slash fiction.
I'm really surprised no one's actually brought a book Magnum comic of that.
Bring out the space gimp. Yeah, I mean, the Metrons, you can understand their motivation because obviously it's like they're minding their own business and then these two ships come in there. I mean, it's funny because it's sort of like this idea of territory and space. So this is our space. So no, it's not really. It's space. It's massive. If you let these guys just carry on, they obviously have a revulsion towards violence and violent thoughts. Maybe again, it's superior creatures looking down their nose.
Oh yeah, but can't get enough of seeing two of them scrap it out.
This is the thing. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If that's how they feel, then why don't they just destroy them and be done with it? I mean, you know,
Terry, you just can't understand. their brains are just too far advanced for you to understand their motivation.
You'll take another 1,000 years.
Yeah, take another 1,000 years to realise why we like to watch two guys fighting.
Really? Well, we know because we just like watching violence.
But I think no matter how advanced they are, I think what really pisses them off is the fact that both Spock and Kirk insist on calling them Metrons throughout the whole episode. And I think they do it on purpose. Just to say, oh yeah, right, okay.
We're Mr. Metron. It's Metron, actually.
Metron.
Sure. Sorry,
Metron. I didn't evolve for another 1,000 years to call me Metron.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, just going back to some, just a little bit earlier in the episode, sorry to be jumping around, but that's the scene in Kirk's quarters with Spock, where Spock is kind of trying to persuade him that there could be any other reasons why the Gorn attacked Cestus III, rather than it being a prelude to invasion, and he backs down pretty quickly.
You allude to invasion, Captain. You have positive proof, hasn't
I? I have all the proof I need on Cestus III.
Not necessarily, sir. Several possible explanations come.
How can you explain a massacre like that? No, Mr. Spock. The threat is clear and immediate.
Interestingly, there's a missing player in that scene, and that's McCoy. Mm-hmm. I think if Bones had been in there, that would have been a really interestingly written scene because he would have definitely, I think, sided with Spock on this instance. I don't even know he was down there on the planet, being a doctor and being McCoy. I think he would have gone, look, hang on, mate, you're overreacting here. You need to think this thing through and don't get angry.
Well, but generally, he's put there to be the emotional ramp, isn't he? He builds up the emotion in any scene he's in, and he's the one, obviously, the first one who say, "Oh, maybe we've got this all wrong completely." Maybe they were just protecting what they had.
Yeah. I mean, but Bones generally, I mean, his character tends to move around and do things according to what the writers want him to do.
Exactly.
But I mean, generally speaking, he's consistent. He's usually very upright guy. He's quite happy to accept when he's wrong. Oftentimes because he's written to be wrong and then he has to apologise for being wrong later and say, oh, sorry.
Maybe he was a bit pissed off because he didn't get that dinner he wanted.
Maybe he didn't get,
he was looking forward to that dinner.
Yeah, he was.
But Kirk is almost like the McCoy in this instance, isn't he? He's massively emotional about it, but oftentimes you'll have McCoy.
He'll be the balance.
McCoy and Spock arguing two sides. Kirk makes a decision based
upon
this.
He's seething with anger.
He's so angry that it's not. And it's, I mean, maybe it jars because I just finished watching Corbomite Maneuver beforehand, where he's like super measured, you know, and you know, graceful in victory and raids aid to his enemies. Mm. And this one, he's just really, really gung ho. I mean, this is what Star Trek is, and it does do this because it tells individual stories. So you've got to separate that. But I still think that it's. For me, it's not consistent with Kirk's character.
I mean, there is a line in there which Kirk says that they talk about being the policeman of the universe as well. and that's it. It is a military force. The other, when we actually watched the last episode we were talking about, they were a proper, you know, professional sort of outfit that were actually exploring things.
Yeah.
Well, this time they seem now to be, you know, a military or a police force, you know, and they are and there's a lot of stuff about justice in this, you know, sort of like justice for the people who have died and so on, and so it does take a very different turn to the way we actually see the whole of the organisation.
The writing on this episode was there were some problems. This is Gene Kuhn's first episode that he wrote. It was one that had to be done in a hurry.
Yeah.
Because they were having problems getting scripts together. Some of them weren't good enough. Some of them were taking too long to put together, like City on the Edge Forever. And so he basically took Friday afternoon off, went home, got typewriter out, got this script out in that weekend. The first person who saw it looked at it and she said, you've ripped off this story.
Called Arena.
It wasn't called Arena.
No, it was a short story, but yeah, it was
called Arena, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah, I think it was called Arena, but they didn't call it. I think what happened was he wrote the story, but here it is.
And
mate, this is someone else's story. Yeah. And I think it was called Arena, and they said, we might as well call it that, because then they paid the guy.
They actually bought it off him.
Frederick Brown.
Yeah.
Frederick L. Brown. Yeah.
They didn't tell him that they'd actually already written it.
We'd like to adapt your story, by the way. I mean, this happens, of course.
Yeah, doesn't it does, yeah.
This happens particularly in genre fiction. There are no great ideas, you know, that bestow one person. So, yeah, it's an interesting story behind it.
But overall, I was going to say, actually, that this story, again, this trope is the same trope as we have in Predator. For certain bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Do it now!
Yeah.
The
combat scenes, then the chase scenes, big part of that.
Yeah.
We've talked about the rubber suit and what we think about it. I mean, what do we think about the actual action sequences in these? Do they hold up? Are they still enjoyable in 2018 eyes?
They're a bit B movie, aren't they? They're polystyrene rocks and big foam rubber suits.
I love those rocks, man.
No, they are. And who's to say? Who's to say we don't know alien geology at all?
No.
There may be rocks that look like sprayed polystyrene.
I actually love the sequence as it built up, because the thing is that the two characters, you've got the Gorn and Kirk, and you know the
I love his laugh, by the way. His laugh is excellent. That is one of my favourite things.
It's great. But the first thing is the Gorn goes over and he pulls this big effing stick, and Kurt goes over and pulls this little twig on.
I love that because it just shows their like evolutionary like departure, doesn't it? They've got this big lizard who's just like wrecking the what foliage there is around there, and then the monkey climbs the tree, doesn't it?
Yeah. But it was a real one-upmanship. Well, actually, it was a one-downmanship, I think. Actually,
no, but I do like the self-awareness of Kurt when he's holding his stick and he's looking at the girls and he's going,
"What did I do that?"
He just chucks it and says, "Forget it." So I'm not going to lead this.
That gets me that line of what I would give for a club. No, you tried that earlier, mate. It didn't work.
I did actually think that the whole fight sequence, after a while, did take on a road runner versus Wile E. Coyote.
Yes, there was.
And when I was looking at the bit, there was the big boulder at the top of that crevice. I was expecting it to fall down with Kirk on it. You know,
sort of like. or you expect the Gorn to like fish out a sign from behind his back saying gulp.
Yeah, no, I think Kirk is roadrunner in this scenario, isn't it? And the Gorn is poor old Wile E. Coyote. Because, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, he'd set that rock up there, hadn't he? I think that was part one of the parts of his plan.
I thought he spotted it. There's a rock up there.
Maybe the Metron put it up there.
Yeah.
Do you mind? It's a Metron, actually. The Gorn laughing. The Gorn laughing while he's setting this track. Wait till he gets a load of this one. He's really loving it. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's really interesting what you say about how the evolution of the two different species. Yeah, the monkey sort of like, you know, taking the higher ground, and whereas the lizard, the big powerful lizard, can literally reshape its environment, you know, to its bidding, and create a knife or a stabby thing with its own brute strength and stuff like that. But of course, does that, because the Gorn doesn't get the whole mineral deposits that are lying around where they can make a cannon.
Yeah.
So do we think that the Metron, or indeed the Metron, allowed, set things up so that the Gorn could set traps and build, make knives, fashion knives, allowed for the human to build a cannon. Do you think the Gorn didn't? Do you think they had cannons in Gorn society?
I really don't know. And quite frankly, I can't imagine why I would know.
Do you think that's all?
No, I think it just made a great story. I think the Gorn makes excellent chat. And the thing is, the Gorn goes straight into it. He's already thinking ahead. He's already using, like Kirk is really just throw rocks.
But it was that.
Yeah, and he makes sort of like pretty much 10 millennia of leap between throwing rocks and actually
building cannons.
Yeah,
he evolves pretty much.
He evolves pretty quickly.
I do think that Terry has a point that everything was left there, and I think that the things for Kirk, because he was standing around when he found all that sulfur and stuff like this, and he starts tasting it. sort of licking it and rubbing it all over himself. And I'm just thinking, you know.
And, yeah, go into the Gorn's mind. I mean, like, the Gorn is there going, all I've got to do is catch this guy and, like, he's toast. He's really, I have got this one. And not only that.
The Gorn was smart.
He's getting a commentary of what Kirk's going to do.
No, that's it. Kirk was really stupid. I'm going to go over here and use these diamonds.
I've got an image in my mind of a social media update, and it's got Kirk just telling what he's doing and how much trouble he's in and how this might be his last update. And then the final update is Gorn saying, "I have read every word you've said." And you twat, did you not think?
#.
Yeah, yeah. No, Kirk definitely overshares, doesn't he? Yeah.
Tweets from Kirk.
Tweets from Gorn. I have heard everything you said. Yeah. I mean, I enjoy watching this on one level from an adventurous point of view.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do think the whole thing is, I mean, it's a very poorly aimed cannon and the Gorn is moving unfeasibly slowly. And there's that aspect of it, for me, just less than convincing, but it does kind of work. I mean, some of the action sequences, you know, are cumbersome, but I think also to a 60s audience, that Gorn is probably quite realistic. Or at least certainly quite scary.
On a small TV.
Yeah. I don't think people would have seen that too many often. A bit like Baylock in Corbin Mine Manoeuvre.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it would have been impressive at the time and obviously not so impressive now.
He's an obvious monster. That's what he's there to be. And the same with Baylock. These characters here are obvious monsters.
Yeah.
These are obvious bad guys. You know, you shouldn't feel any... You shouldn't identify with them at all because... No. They will eat you.
But that's the problem, though. You see, the thing about that is that I get the impression that the idea of this episode was to say, well, look, you know, just because he looks like this fearsome lizard, you know, there is common ground. You know, there's been a misunderstanding. That's why you're in this difficult position. Well, we're in this difficult position because of the Metros. But the reason why you're chasing each other is because there's been this misunderstanding. And even though he's big and green and ugly and scary and vicious, it doesn't mean you can't actually, you know, find some kind of, you know, common ground. And I think that all gets lost in the climax.
Kirk does mention that in his own dialogue, though, doesn't he? He does actually come out and say about he's got to compete with his natural revulsion.
Yes.
Going back to evolution again, isn't it?
Where this is a starship captain, you know, a guy's a clever guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's not so much that, but I mean, it's just I guess there was an opportunity, I think, and it would have been consistent with episodes of Star Trek in the first season if there had been some kind of acknowledgement that, you know, we flew off the handle, we got carried away with this and it led us to this bad situation. And maybe if we were a little bit more measured about the whole thing, you know, we might have done so. But I don't know, they did destroy an entire outpost. They did a lot of people.
I actually really liked the beginning sequence, the action sequence then with Kirk and Spock and, you know, with right at the beginning with the mortars and all that sort of stuff. I actually liked that little sequence.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. That was great.
That was actually, I thought that actually was better than the...
Yeah, we were talking about pacing as we normally do. The whole episode is really well paced. I mean, it doesn't relent, really. It just keeps on going, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But the thing that they never really explained was the whole trap thing at the beginning, the false signals that they were getting. Yeah. So these were things that deliberately set up by the Gorns, and we
I assumed. Think you needed to, because it just showed how
underhand and how sneaky
they are. Yeah, I think that they wanted to, perhaps what they wanted to do was to get a measure of just how much power the Federation or Starfleet had.
Yeah.
You know, we've made short work of these guys. Is it that easy? How powerful are these people?
I mean,
let's get a...
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could have been... So, yeah, I don't know whether or not it was like, well, this is an outpost, you know, we better destroy this outpost because they're invaders. But what we also want to do is there's going to be payback, so we better have the upper hand. Because, yeah. like, they'll send a ship along, someone will realise it happened, they'll realise it's us.
I feel the plan was very well orchestrated.
Because they're bringing tactical guys
get
down.
Get all your best guys down there and we'll just wipe them out.
Yeah, it does demonstrate an understanding of human behaviour as well. They must obviously know they're humans, because they think, well, what we'll do is we'll just promise them a slap-up meal, you know, and then they'll send their senior staff down. And then we can zap them, which is interesting given that there's no prior contact between the species as far as
we're we don't know that.
Interesting fan fiction idea there.
Yeah, well, yeah. We don't know that because, you see, the guy who was the survivor was talking about the colony actually servicing other people coming in from, you know, other...
Yeah, so they could have got intelligence,
you know, so that sort of place had...
He was quite good. I like him. I thought he was... He played that really, really well. There's a lot of anger in that, and so it does set up Kirk's anger quite nicely, but I guess I'm just used to him being a bit more... But just not falling for that, just being a bit nurtured. He doesn't kill the Gorn in the end, obviously, because he's a decent guy. And he doesn't commit cold-blooded murder. And the Metrone, or the Metron, it sort of like sees him like that. I mean, how do we feel about the Metron's motivations throughout this whole thing? I mean, should they have, you know, I mean, this setup, would it have been better if they just said, you know, look, just go away or ignore them?
I don't know if you're a great one for reading the novelisations, because
James Blish's novelisations actually put back in a line. There was a line there saying that actually the Metron said, well, what I was actually going to do is I was going to destroy you as well. Yeah. I was going to destroy the winner as well. I just obviously didn't say that, but that's what I was going to do. And James Blish put that line back in, and the Metron had... changed their mind and said, I was going to actually destroy you too, but I'm not going to do that now. In fact, I'm not going to destroy anybody, and off you can go.
You know, because it's, you know, because your species is going to develop in 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then we'll have a chat with you.
Yeah.
You know, so I actually thought that was quite a good sort of way to end it, you know. And
yeah, it's the because there are parallels, I suppose, with the Metrons and Baylock, and there are also parallels with, as we mentioned earlier, the Talosians in the cage, in look as well. They've got their sort of shimmery blue dresses. They've got.
Also, it's played by a woman as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, a very androgynous kind of character.
But it was
the voice, also the same guy who did the voice for Baylock.
By sparing your helpless enemy, who surely would have destroyed you demonstrated the advanced trait of mercy. Something we hardly expected. We feel that there may be hope for your kind. Therefore, you will not be destroyed. It would not be civilized.
Oh, Rock.
Who did what? Did the what Metro?
Yes.
As well. Was Baylock as well?
Vic Perrin.
Oh, right. Cool. We didn't name check Vic Perrin, did we, at all in the last
one? I think that's his name.
Right.
But, same guy did the voiceover for...
And the voice for the Gorn was... what's his name? Who played Rock in...
Ted Cassidy.
Ted Cassidy.
He was.
Good old Ted Cassidy, yes.
Who was also did the voice in the Corbomite Maneuver for... Baylock.
Baylock's puppet, wasn't he, I think?
Yeah.
Oh, right, so Ted Cassidy was Baylock's puppet.
Yeah, so they're all connected.
And the Gorn. Yeah. Okay, well, we've got a connection between these two episodes. We've got a
good connection, yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. Photo novel. No photo novel? There must have been a photo novel for this.
I don't think there was.
Really?
No.
Wow, that is a glaring omission, that one.
We'll have to check it out, but I don't think it was.
There needs to be a photo novel.
Yeah. I think...
IDW, if you're listening, we need a photo novel of Arena.
We should do, but And the same with the Corbomite Maneuver. There wasn't one.
That's peculiar.
I don't know if there was a well. It's funny how the way we've been doing our podcasts. the podcast, you know, we've been doing this over a year now. It's funny how the beginning of the podcast, every single week we would actually do our favourite episodes and we would end up actually having a photo novel. But it seems that at the moment we're in a sort of situation where that we're in,
yeah,
in between.
We've gone past photos. It's memes that pass in the night, mate.
You know.
Yeah. It's just the way.
I'm sure we return to it. There's quite a few still episodes we will be doing
that. We'll have to choose wisely, then, won't we?
Yes, indeed. We will have to choose wisely how we go things in the future. There is a legacy for the Gorn. The Gorn do turn up. If you lower your RPGs, that's the role-playing games, not the guns, then the Gorn turn up in there quite a lot. They're quite well developed. And also, there's a CGI Gorn, full CGI Gorn, in the Enterprise episode In a Mirror Darkly. That is a celebrated episode because it's a Mirror Universe episode, and it's a moderately decent Mirror Universe episode. And it's a bit of a fan favourite because it's a two-parter, and it's, you know, kind of well put together towards that back end of Enterprise. And the Gorn do turn up in there. There is a Gorn, and it's CGI'd. I won't pass any further judgment on that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I will. Obviously, CGI is better effects, I suppose, than the. But it's not faithful to the Gorn in Arena. The Gorn in Arena is slow and cumbersome, whereas the Gorn in A Mirror Darkly is not. It's more like a raptor.
Well,
from
maybe
Jurassic
the captain
Park.
Had a hangover, and maybe that's why.
Maybe yeah. There could be a scientific explanation if you want to attach one to it.
Yeah, no, I want to hear it.
Well, the Gorn are cold blooded, and like all cold blooded creatures on Earth, anyway, at least. Then they will only become active if warm enough.
Yes, that's true.
So if the actual planet is cold that they're fighting on, then they will be slow and sluggish. This is what happens with reptiles. That's why reptiles don't live in cold climates.
Now, it'd be interesting to see whether or not that turns up in A Mirror Darkly. I might have to watch the episode again to see whether or not maybe that is dropped in there.
So they could be very sprightly if they're in a warm enough environment.
Yes,
so.
Which they would have been in this one. It would have been because they were on board they're on board a starship, which is a different environment. They may well actually have been referenced that in that episode. Who knows? I've got a funny feeling they might have done. I've only seen it once.
So. Okay.
Mm. Interesting.
Interesting. Science weird, kids.
Science, kids.
Yeah.
And it's got a legacy, this one, because obviously it's a massive fan favourite, and the Gorn is an iconic image. Jason Gorn is a little toy that is in the Star Trek Discovery writer's room. And then
there's a skeleton, isn't there, in the early Discovery episodes as well? There's a Gorn skeleton in...
Oh, well spotted you. I didn't spot that.
No, there is. If you in where they put Ripper in... The room there where they first put him in there.
Yeah.
There's loads of little artifacts and dead aliens there, and there is a...
Graham's got Netflix, listeners, and he's watching Discovery. He's not giving much away, but we get the impression that he's digging it. But,
watching Star Trek in HD, you see a lot more, don't you?
You do indeed. Yeah, you got hours of it. Yeah, okay. And there's that wonderful sort of like promo that they did for a game with William Shatner sat on the sofa playing a console game.
I heard about this, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's a nice little picture. Anywho, is there anything about this episode that you want to add that you don't feel that we have said it? Or any glaring omissions from
this
episode?
I'm ready to rate it.
Right, okay then. In that case, let's have your rating.
Very good.
Very good?
Yeah.
Very good.
I'd say, compared to this one, to the last one, I'd say it stands up with Corbin Might Maneuver as one of those. If someone said, I was, before viewing this again, I was so comfortable with this episode, and I thought, I think people like this more than they should. Mm. I think, yes, it's very memorable, very famous, and it springs easily to mind. So if you name your five favourite Star Trek episodes, it could easily be one of them. Mm. And I perhaps overthought that a bit. And I thought, well, maybe people aren't thinking hard enough. There are better episodes than this. But I can see why now. It is a very, very good episode. And there are bits in there that are really, really good. Mm. So that I really like.
Don't worry.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I hadn't seen this since I saw it originally in black and white. So decades.
Bloody hell. Wow. Okay.
You know, so I forgot a lot about it.
I'm sure you did.
So I really enjoyed it.
Good for you.
I enjoyed the the beginning sequence as well. As I said, it was like the war film type bit to it, and I really enjoyed that.
So it sums up for
you.
Yeah, I mean, I was a bit down. I've been a bit down in this episode for reasons that I've explained. Yes. So I won't explain them again. So I mean, I'm actually left a little bit disappointed by this experience, sadly. But I mean, I have consistently loved and enjoyed this episode for decades, and I'm not about to stop doing so now. So it's a thumbs up for me too.
Good,
excellent.
So yeah, that's great. So I think we can knock that on the head then. So from myself, Terry, and from Derek and Graham, it's goodbye.
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 Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to our podcast. We very much hope that you enjoyed it. And if you did and you don't already, then why not hit that subscribe button now on Apple Podcasts or on any other podcatcher of your choice. If you are a subscriber, then why not reward us with a 5-star review? I'm pretty certain that if you've listened all the way to this point, then we probably deserve it. On our next podcast, we'll be talking about another episode from the first season of the original series, that being the time travel episode, Tomorrow is Yesterday. So until then, keep on grokking, Trekkies.
We are the Metrons.